doctrine of qualified immunity applies to both of the federal claims.
So these are some big bad guy police officers.
Why can't you guys just resolve this? I mean, it seems like you're spending a lot of money fighting this when you're not fighting for some grand principle here.
So this court takes plaintiff's version.
Are you aware of any other case where at the scene of an emergency, a police officer arrested someone who's attending to someone medically?
For that reason alone, that's a simple reason why the qualified immunity test, for the second prong of the qualified immunity test, to apply here.
Or it could be that it's just such an outrageous thing to do that nobody's ever done it.
Welcome back to the Lackluster Channel. In February of 2014, volunteer firefighter Jacob Gregoire responded to an accident on the interstate. As an engineer, his duties consisted of pumping water to fires, maintaining equipment on board the engine, and overall safety of the crew while responding to an incident.
Okay, I don't have time for a cell phone. This is ridiculous. CHP is arresting engineer Gregoire for where he spotted the fire engine.
A CHP officer handcuffs a Chula Vista firefighter on the scene of a crash. And tonight, we're hearing the reaction over the radio as the incident escalated.
CHP will not give us information about who this officer is or if he's been reprimanded for cuffing a firefighter during a rollover accident in Chula Vista last night on the 805 near Telegraph Canyon Road and East Orange Avenue.
Gregoire positioned the engine to block oncoming traffic, creating a pocket to protect emergency personnel and the victims on scene. But when a CHP officer arrived late, he immediately began instructing firefighters to move their apparatus to get the highway open once again.
Firefighters say they park at an angle to protect emergency crews, patients, and drivers.
While two other fire engines left the scene, Gregoire says he refused to leave because his rig was acting as a buffer, protecting the ambulance from traffic.
In the middle of patient care, engineer Gregoire refused, citing safety concerns, which led to the officer arresting him for obstruction.
We asked you to clear the road and you said no, and you've been arrested.
We're in the middle of patient care with patients on the freeway. They're putting him in handcuffs at this time and walking him away.
He made all firefighters look good in that situation. He was there to protect the citizens, and he was willing to take a stand to do that.
Gregoire was handcuffed and detained for approximately 30 minutes before being released. And eventually, the officer was identified as Sergio Flores, and the CHP stood by their officer's actions.
A local firefighter who was cuffed by the CHP at an accident scene says that he was humiliated inside the CHP cruiser.
It was a very odd, surreal situation. I asked him, I said, well, are you prepared to take care of these two patients? And he replied, without even thinking, those two people are not my problem.
Afterward, Gregoire filed a lawsuit for the wrongful arrest and excessive force.
Because of a bulky uniform and past shoulder pain, he asked Officer Flores to loosen the cuffs.
I said, I'm not going anywhere. Can you please just loosen the cuffs? Click. They got a little bit tired.
Gregoire says when he asked again, the officer laughed at him.
Officer Sergio Torres claimed that he was entitled to qualified immunity because making the unlawful arrest was a reasonable mistake. He would also argue that handcuffing an arrestee was not excessive force. However, in the lawsuit, Gregoire claimed that on two occasions, he had asked the officer to loosen the cuffs, and both times, the officer tightened them instead.
Gregoire says he's filed a legal claim against the CHP and state because it's clear the incident is being swept under the rug. His attorney, Dan Gillian, says he's uncovered a documented 2010 incident involving Officer Flores threatening another firefighter with arrest.
There's people within the department that I think want to hide certain facts, and that's the problem.
Aside from those claims, the issue of whether or not Officer Flores had probable cause to arrest and place Gregoire in cuffs was in question as well. In a motion for summary judgment, the district court found that the officer's arrest of Gregoire for obstructing the officer's duties was not justified, given that Gregoire was acting within his duties as a firefighter to ensure the scene of the accident was safe. The court ruled that no reasonable officer would believe it was lawful to arrest a firefighter acting in that capacity. Qualified immunity did not apply, and thus, Officer Flores appealed the decision to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Deputy Attorney General Robert Rogoyski from the California Attorney General's Office, here on behalf of defendants, appellants, California Highway Patrol, and Officer Sergio Flores. May it please the court. This is a qualified immunity case, and the court should find that the doctrine of qualified immunity applies to both of the federal claims in this action. I'm going to start today by talking about the arrest claim, and then I'll move on to the excessive force claim, and if there's any time remaining, I'll address the issue of jurisdiction over the state law claims. So starting first with the question of qualified immunity for the arrest, there are three independent reasons why this court can reverse the lower court, but the most straightforward is the second prong of the qualified immunity test. Here we have two competing interests. On the part of the fire department and plaintiff Gregoire, there was an interest in management of the scene in terms of taking care of the patients who are present on the scene. That's their perspective. From CHP's perspective, there's a substantial, there's a very important competing interest in protecting passing motorists who are going by a freeway that's partially blocked by fire engines and by a squad car and by an ambulance from subsequent accidents, being injured or being killed on a busy freeway at night. So we have these two competing interests. And against that, we have a set of state statutes that don't explain what consultation means, and they don't explain which of these competing interests predominates.
Well, doesn't that case, the County of San Bernardino versus City of San Bernardino, kind of outline who's in charge of what in terms of emergency scene operations?
Yes, and the statutes give a general outline.
Clear that that the police are in charge of the scene management, but medical personnel are in charge of patient care decisions, right?
Yes, but the specific provision at issue there comes down to Health and Safety Code 1798.6, which says that priority goes to persons exposed to the most serious risk. It doesn't say how you figure that out. Is the most serious risk the patients who were on the ground, who were recovering from the accident?
Well, this is a case of disputed facts, and I realize that the parties have different stories, but suppose we take this and look at the facts in the light most favorable to Gregor, the non-moving party, and his witnesses. They all seem to say that he was actually attending physically to a patient when he was arrested by Flores.
Yes, but it is also undisputed that, in the words of the lower court, that Officer Flores faced concern about secondary accidents, and there are undisputed facts which establish that Officer Flores talked to the firefighters and Officer Colunga talked to the firefighters, which Officer Flores overheard. So this court takes plaintiff's version.
Are you aware of any other case where at the scene of an emergency, a police officer arrested someone who's attending to someone medically?
I'm not aware of a reported case. And for that reason alone, the second prong of the qualified immunity test applies here. There have been situations, I believe factually, I'm
no,
not sure this is in the record.
Don't tell us things outside the record. I'm just saying, have you ever seen, is there any other case that, you know, is out there?
We're not aware of any. We're not aware of any case that has addressed a situation even remotely like this, Your Honor. And for that reason alone, that's a simple reason why the qualified immunity test, for the second prong of the qualified immunity test, to apply here.
Or it could be that it's just such an outrageous thing to do that nobody's ever done it.
So Your Honor refers to the obviousness exception to qualified immunity. This court has recently defined obviousness as conduct so flagrantly unlawful that few dare its attempt. This case defies obviousness because we have a state statute which contains an inherent contradiction. When you have an EMT who is engaging in their duties, and that EMT is arguably in conflict with a CHP officer engaging in their duties, who wins? We don't know. The California state statutes don't explain that. We're not aware of any case law that explains that. So it's hard to say that this is so flagrantly unlawful, because there's no explanation for what qualifies as unlawful.
Were there ever charges brought against Gregor?
No, there were no charges brought against Mr. Gregor. So going back to the obviousness question very, very quickly, if there were a definition of consultation and there were case law on that particular case law from the circuit, then we might get into an obviousness zone. Or if there were obviousness usually applied in excessive force cases involving extreme examples of excessive force. That's just not the situation that we have here. And it is an open question whose interest predominates if you have a patient on the ground and someone attending to them, and a concern, which is undisputed and recognized by the lower court, that the next person's going to ram into the back of one of these vehicles that's blocking the freeway and get injured or killed. You know, who gets priority? We don't know. CHP doesn't know. Firefighters don't know, and that's why they're supposed to consult about it. But we don't have a definition of consult either. So how does that get figured out? When we have all of these questions, which cannot be answered.
Consult doesn't mean arrest.
I agree with that. But consult, one regular definition of consult is to seek information or advice from. That's a pretty plain language definition of consult. If you use that definition, that's what happened. Officer Colungo went and talked to the firefighters, asked them to move their trucks. They didn't. He asked them, why are you not moving them? They gave their explanation. Under that plain language definition, consultation would have happened within the meaning of the statute. But we don't even have that here. We don't know if that's good enough or not. And a CHP officer in a developing situation on the ground who has to make some quick decisions in the interest of public safety needs to have some discretion to make a decision that we might afterwards say was not prudential. But that's what qualified immunity does. It protects our discretion in these rapidly evolving situations. And sometimes in the application of 2020 hindsight, we may say that may not have been the most advisable thing to do. But again, 2020 hindsight doesn't apply to the situation here.
So Colungo went and talked to the firefighters, but Flores didn't.
Well, Flores also spoke to Mr. Gregoire, but it's undisputed that he further overheard Colungo speaking to the firefighters and specifically asking them, you know, hey, why have you not yet moved these fire trucks?
And the explanation was?
The explanation was that they were engaged in patient care, although I don't think that's technically part of the record. I think can be inferred that it's part of the record.
And that's certainly what Gregoire says, right?
Yes.
And his two witnesses.
Yes. And that is plaintiff's version of the facts. But it's also undisputed that California Highway Patrol had a competing interest in protecting passing motorists from getting into a severe accident.
Why didn't they just get the keys and move the fire truck?
So that's a good question. It turns out the only person who was qualified to move the fire truck, and you know, no one found this out until after the arrest happened, was Mr. Gregoire. Captain Albright himself later said, I believe, around the same time that he was not qualified to move the fire truck.
Seems like I don't want to go into it, but anyway, go on. Which time did you want to save?
I have a question for counsel, if I may. Let's put the arrest aside for a moment, and let's say I assume that there's not clearly established law and someone's got to be the captain in that situation, and so the plaintiff loses. Still, how can it be justified on the excessive force claim for police to put like an EMT in handcuffs, which also were alleged to be too temporary? I mean, as I looked at this, it looked like an unusual case of two good guys getting in a dispute, a cop and an EMT. But if the dispute required an arrest, why did the police put the EMT Gregoire into cuffs?
So again, we're getting to the distinction between what is within the scope of discretion and what is prudential. Looking back at the situation, we may say it was not prudential or advisable to put a firefighter into handcuffs. But it is standard practice everywhere during the course of an arrest to place the person in handcuffs. Officer Flores did not know at the time whether this individual he was placing under arrest would behave like a normal individual under arrest or would respond with a substantial amount of adrenaline. So he did the standard procedure, which is to place that person in handcuffs. As to the tightening of the handcuffs, again, the best answer here comes from the second prong of the qualified immunity test. We don't have a case on point which deals with this specific situation, which is We have to remember two important facts. One is that there was no physical injury. It's undisputed that Gregoire was not harmed. He didn't have any bruises, nothing. The other fact that's important to recognize here is plaintiff says, he asked for the handcuffs to be tightened and they were, or he asked for them to be loosened, and they were just tightened. That's actually not what the record shows. One of the pages cited by plaintiff, record at 93, is an admission by plaintiff where he asked for them to be loosened, then they were locked, which had the effect of making them tighter. So we have these two interesting features, handcuffs requested to be loosened, but which were tightened to a point short of causing injury, and plaintiff admits they were locked, which is a procedure to prevent them from causing injury. Is it beyond debate that every single reasonable officer would know that you can't do that based on existing law? No. And in fact, there are some situations where a reasonable officer might think that handcuffs, which can be tightened to some point short of causing injury, should be tightened. So again, we don't have a case on point. And this is one of those areas where it might not be advisable to have a case on point, because we're dealing with excessive force in the sense of the minimum amount excessive force you need to have a viable claim, not an extreme case of an excessive force like a shooting or something like that. And we're getting very close to traipsing all over the legitimate scope of officer discretion. And we want to avoid a situation where the manual of handcuffing procedure is written entirely by the judiciary. So as a prudential matter here, when there's no injury, when we have no cases which are on all fours, all threes, all twos with this, then the safest thing to do is say the second prong of the qualified immunity test applies.
And counsel, is there evidence in the record supporting the point you made in response to my question, saying that all officers put people in handcuffs whenever they make an arrest?
I believe that's a... There isn't evidence in the record that I'm aware of that I can cite offhand, but I believe that is a well-recognized principle in this circuit's jurisprudence. And I believe it's in the statement also appears in one of the cited cases. I think it's Lalonde. I'm blanking on the specific case site. I'm under 3 minutes, so I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
You may.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Judge Gould. My name is Jeremy Robinson. I represent the appellee, Jacob Gregoire, in this case. Your Honors, you had mentioned at the beginning of my colleague's argument that this is a case involving a lot of disputed facts, and I think that's one of the key things that needs to be kept in mind when looking at the district court's ruling here. One of the problems, I believe, with the CHP's argument is that it tends to flow from their version of what they think happened, and they then take that and say, well, under our version of these facts, we're entitled to qualified immunity. But of course, the opposite is what you're actually supposed to do at this stage. And so you have to start from the premise that we're working from Mr. Gregoire's version of the facts.
My understanding of this is that Officer Flores could still be entitled to qualified immunity depending on what facts are found by the jury.
If I'm understanding your question correctly, it is possible, yes, that the case could be tried to the jury, and depending on what factual findings the jury makes, Officer Flores could be entitled to qualified immunity. But it's also possible that the jury could make a finding of fact where he would not be entitled to qualified immunity,
right,
which is why the summary judgment was denied.
The disputed facts at this stage.
Correct. That's exactly true. So I think, the legal issue that they've raised relates to the clearly established part of the qualified immunity analysis. And this, it was just sort of mentioned in passing in the district court. It wasn't really even made an issue there, but they've made it an issue on this appeal. So I wanted to address that part of it. But I do think because the law and the Supreme Court has continually told us that we have to look at the specific factual parameters and not just sort of a broad brush of what happened, it's important to get a few facts out there from Mr. Gregoire's perspective. The first being that he was, by his admission and by several other people's admission, engaged in patient care at the time that this happened. Mr. Flores, Officer Flores, and Officer, maybe Officer Colonga, say that they didn't see that. But we take that as true for the purpose of this particular situation. In addition, Officer Flores had placed a flare pattern behind his car, which he had parked behind the fire trucks and the ambulance on the freeway. So he had already established a protective zone behind these to eliminate or at least minimize the risk that someone was going to crash into the back of the fire trucks. And there was some dispute about whether the ambulance was in the freeway or not in the freeway, but again, Captain Albright says that he believes that it was. We take that as accepted at this time. So one of the critical components, which my colleague mentioned, is he believed there was some level of consultation between Officer Colonga and maybe to a lesser extent Officer Flores and the fire department. But the record does not reflect that, unless you consider consultation to be, I command you to move your truck. That's essentially the level of consultation that there was. If you look at Officer Colonga's declaration, and that is, I have it in here just a second, that's page 180 of the excerpts of record, and I'm looking at page 183. He said, I had conversations with members of the other two fire crews to ask them to move their trucks into the center median. That's the extent of the consultation. I mean, I know my colleague said he maybe asked them why they didn't move their trucks, and there was some colloquy about that, but there's no record of that. That's not part of our record on appeal here. Essentially, what we
counsel,
have...
Counsel, Judge Gould, if I could ask you a question.
Yes.
Along the lines of what I asked your friend on the other side of the case, is there any authority pre-existing, some case law, that says that if we had the situation where one, I'll call him a good guy, an EMT is doing some medical care at an accident, but a police officer, a second good guy, is on the scene and has to try to keep traffic lanes open for purposes of avoiding another accident. Is there any law that says in those circumstances the police officer has to defer to the EMT if the EMT's working on a patient?
There is no case on point on that. I think both sides will agree to that point. What our position is that the statutes themselves are clear and unambiguous in this particular fact pattern. Again, when you're looking at the facts as they are construed in most favorable terms to Mr. Gregoire, because the statutes do require, they say shall consult, they require some level of consultation by the CHP or whoever's in charge with the emergency medical technicians before making some decisions that affect patient care. So there may be some gray areas out there where there was a consultation and there was some disagreement between the people about whether the, you know, who gets priority, things of that sort. I can see there may be some circumstances, but I don't think this is one of them because there wasn't any consultation. So if you just look at the terms of the statutes themselves, they're not ambiguous on that point. And I don't think you need a case to have addressed that particular circumstance to understand the statutes. And I should point out, Officer Flores himself references these statutes as a basis for making his arrest. So there's no claim that he was mistaken about the law or he didn't understand or that they weren't clear and he wasn't sure exactly what he was supposed to be doing.
So your case rests on the shall consult, and your version of the fact is that he didn't consult, and that's a clear mandatory duty under the statute. And the defense is that he did consult. So that's what the battle is going to be about at trial?
That's certainly a big part of it. I can't speak for them for their defense, but that appears to be the position they're taking. Their briefs suggest that they believe he did what was required under the statute by way of some form of consultation.
Is there any definition of consult, or we just look at the ordinary meaning of consult?
In this case, I think you can look at the ordinary meaning of consult, and in fact, I would be happy to accept their definition of it, because he defined it as requesting information from, or talking, you know, getting information from. And again, if you look at the facts, the declarations, there was no exchange of information with Officer Kalunga. He didn't say, okay, you know, I have this concern. I understand you all are taking care of patients, but I'm also worried about this other circumstance. We need to work this out. Let's try to figure out what's the best thing to do.
He could have probably had someone else attend to the patient while Gregor moved the truck, if that was...
Probably, yes.
Other firefighters there, right?
Yes, there were other firefighters there. And
other EMTs there?
Other paramedics there, yes. So they could have made that kind of an arrangement to have someone else take over what Mr. Gregor was doing and have Mr. Gregor move the truck out of the way, but that's not how the facts actually unfolded. Again, just sort of to reiterate, Officer Kalunga, by his own testimony, said, I came over and I said, move the trucks out of the way. They're blocking these lanes. There was no back and forth about information, again, of, you know, I understand there's priorities and let's work this out. Get your trucks out of here. Officer Flores overheard that, and there was no consultation by him either. He didn't say, okay, I heard Officer Kalunga talking to you, you know, let's try to figure out how we can get this done. I'm worried about this. He said, move your truck. That's it.
Curiosity question. How did Flores know Gregor was the guy to ask to move the truck?
He originally asked Captain Albright, who was also on the truck, whose truck is this? And Captain Albright said, well, it's our truck, and Mr. Gregor is the driver. He's the engineer of the truck. So Officer Flores then knew that Gregor was the person to tell, to command to move the truck.
Okay, and what fire department was this? Which city? It wasn't San Diego, was it?
No, the city of Chula Vista. It's a city south San Diego County.
It's a smaller city.
Correct, yes. This was outside the city of San Diego territorial bounds.
But, counsel, could you at some point please address the excessive force issue? I wondered if you agreed with your colleague on the other side of the case that anytime there's an arrest, it's reasonable to handcuff somebody.
I don't agree with that, and I would challenge them to come up with something that says that's the case. There's nothing in the record, statements by anyone, declarations by experts, anything else like that, that would suggest that every time someone is arrested, they're put in handcuffs. I mean, I'm not an expert in police procedure myself, but that seems unreasonable to me. And again, I haven't seen anything in the record on this case that says that's the way the police normally operate. And in fact, Mr. Gregor said, you know, let's work this out. After Officer Flores said, I'm going to have to arrest you, Mr. Gregor said, can't we just work this out? And Flores said, no, put the handcuffs on him and put him in the car. And I will note there was my colleague said something about the tightening of the handcuffs, and he referenced one section in the ER, but there's another section, 140 to 141. This is the deposition of Mr. Gregor, where he said, what did Officer Flores do after you asked him if he could loosen the handcuffs, and Gregor said he tightened them. That's page 140 of the ER. So there's clear testimony from Mr. Gregor that he believed, at least from his perception, that the handcuffs were tightened. And we did cite several cases, you know, if you want to talk about clearly established law, there's several cases that say tightening of handcuffs when it's not justified can qualify as excessive force. I don't think that's really a disputed point of law. I don't think you need a specific case that says if a police officer, CHP officer, arrests a firefighter and tightens the handcuffs, that can be excessive force. I think you can extrapolate the general principle that that's going to be excessive force in this circumstance. So, again, I don't agree with the idea that this is ordinary procedure, and I haven't seen anything in this case or elsewhere that suggests that it is. I'm getting short on time, so the one other aspect I wanted to very briefly address, you know, the state has appealed all of the state law causes of action related to this claim as well, and as we've argued, I don't believe this court should exercise jurisdiction to consider those claims. This is an interlocutory appeal on qualified immunity. It's not an appeal after a final judgment where those things are generally going to be thought of. And the test for qualified immunity and the test for liability under the Bain Act, Civil Code 52.1 or assault and battery, things like that, are different. So resolving the qualified immunity issue doesn't resolve those particular claims. And so I would say, regardless of the outcome on that, that the court should remand the state law claims. So I believe it looks like my time is about up. Again, on the qualified immunity, just to get back to the arrest very briefly, I believe the law is clear by statute. We don't need a case that's addressed this particular circumstance. I'll admit there isn't one. But the statute itself says that you have to do this consultation. Again, there may be some circumstances where that becomes confusing or an issue. This case is not one of them. There was no consultation at all. No consultation does not equal some consultation under any structure. So with that, I'll take a seat unless there are any questions.
Curiosity question.
Yes.
CHP is like a state police officer. They're the top guns.
Right.
And
correct.
Fire department was Chula Vista.
Yes, that's
they're
right.
The little guys.
They are the little guys.
So these are some big bad guy police officers, use bad guy in their own context, I'm sure. They're the head honchos on this scene, so to speak, and that's the way they acted. From your perspective.
Right. Our perspective, yes, is correct. That Officer Flores basically marched on the scene. He didn't talk to Officer Colunga at all. You know, they referenced this collective
was
action.
Colunga CHP too?
Colunga CHP also, right. So Colunga gets there first. He tells a couple people to move their trucks, they do. He tells a couple more people to move their trucks, they don't. Flores overhears that. He marches on and says, get your trucks out of here. Doesn't talk to Colunga, doesn't ask them, you know, what are you doing with the patients? How can we get this done? He overhears that, and he immediately takes command and says, move, get out, I'm in control. And that's the end. All right, so I'm going to take my seat.
You dispute his characterization?
Of which part, Your Honor?
Of the CHP being the big guys on the block and they acted like it?
I dispute. Actually, no. I think they do have a different set of interests. I think they do have a different perspective on the scene and the nature of the risk to passing motorists that a reasonable firefighter might have a different perspective on. I think that as between reasonable CHP officers, reasonable firefighters, I think they are going to look at it in different ways. Counsel referred a lot to disputed facts. We're not relying on disputed facts or disputed issues of fact.
Do you contend that Flores actually consulted with Gregor?
Not exactly. We're not saying that he consulted or didn't consult because that would be a disputed issue of fact. What we're saying is based on the undisputed facts, that's fact 63, appellate record 59, fact 64, appellate record 59 also, that he overheard Officer Colunga talking to them.
Right, right. But doesn't he have a mandatory duty under that one statute that says he shall consult to consult?
Yes. And what we're saying is a...
Don't you have to prove at trial that he consulted?
No, we don't, because it just has to be clear to every single reasonable officer beyond debate that that was not consultation to lose qualified immunity. Or stated differently, as long as a reasonable officer
could believe that that was consultation. Okay, that's what you have to show.
Yes, and so we don't need to go to trial for that.
A reasonable officer could think that ordering the firefighter to move the truck constituted consultation.
Yes, it would have to be beyond debate. And because we don't have a definition of consultation, it's not beyond debate.
You can't use the ordinary definition of consultation, like just look at the dictionary?
Well, if we use the ordinary definition, which is to seek information and advice from, then Officer Flores overheard Officer Colunga asking the group why they had not yet moved their engine. So he's seeking advice from them, or not seeking advice, seeking information from them, which is the normal definition of consultation. So a reasonable officer could believe that was consultation, whether or not, as a factual matter, at trial, that turned out to be consultation. So that's our point. And counsel admits there's no case on point here. Now, he says...
So, I'm just curious, because Judge Gold said something that puts this sort of in a perspective for me, which is, look, you guys, your clients are both... They're supposed to be cooperating at the scene of this accident to ensure the public safety and the health of the people involved in the accident. Why can't you guys just resolve this, settle this? I mean, it seems like you're spending a lot of money fighting this when, I mean, you're not fighting for some grand principle here. You're not opposed to each other, really.
Right. So we quote Davis v. Scherer in the briefing, and Davis v. Scherer has a good answer to that question. And if I may quote, the officials are subject to a plethora of rules, often so voluminous, ambiguous, and contradictory, and in such flux that the officials can only comply with or enforce them selectively. In these circumstances, officials should not always err on the side of caution. These situations develop rapidly. It's happening at night. There's patient care going on. There's concern about what's going on in the freeway, and there isn't necessarily an opportunity to have the full, robust consultation we might want post hoc. So, looking at the scope of discretion here, we just have to ask: Could a reasonable officer? Is it beyond debate that a reasonable officer could have taken these actions? Well, yes, we have that. We have that situation because there's no case law in point, as they admit.
You don't want this for discussed, so there'll be some case law on the point, do you?
So this court has discretion to decide the first prong issue as well. Under the first prong, because we say that a reasonable officer could believe that consultation happened, that's all you need for probable cause is a reasonable belief. You don't have to be actually 100% accurate. A more prudential or more conservative way to handle this would be only under the second prong, because as the Supreme Court has warned, highly idiosyncratic factual circumstances do not always create the best law, do not always create the best rules.
Okay. Counsel, I have a question for you, and I guess my question go to your friend on the other side of the case as well. Is there any chance here that if we deferred submission in the case temporarily to let both parties decide, if they both wanted to mediate voluntarily, that this case could go away? In other words, would your office want us to give that option to the two parties, or would you prefer that the court give you a ruling that says when there's a dispute between police and fire personnel, one side or the other wins?
Your Honor, we are always interested in taking advantage of ADR options when they may produce a result that's more efficient and in the interests of the people of the state of California. I have understood prior statements by counsel for Mr. Gregoire to state that they would not be interested in getting rid of this case unless there was a certain very public, very transparent set of sort of rulemaking activity. They may have changed their perspective on that, but that's what we've understood.
Judge Gold is talking about referring you to the Ninth Circuit Mediation Unit. Have you been contacted by them to mediate this case yet, or?
I'm actually not sure factually the exact circumstances what happened with the mediation procedure there, because I came onto this case recently through a change in counsel. So I apologize for not knowing that, Your Honors. I will again state that we're always interested in ADR options.
I don't know if they contact the parties in every case or not, but your side would be interested in mediation, I'm hearing, if Gregoire was also interested.
Yes, Your Honor. So to be specific, deferring the decision here in favor of giving us an opportunity to mediate, yes, we would be interested. If that doesn't happen, we remain confident that they admit there's no case on point. There's no case on point that decides the second prong of the qualified immunity issue.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Robinson, would you be interested in perhaps participating in mediation before our mediation unit?
I believe so, Your Honor. I'm perhaps not the right person to ask about that. I'm principally the appellant lawyer, but I do understand kind of how the case has proceeded. And it is my understanding that there may, I mean, I can't disclose too much in the way of settlement discussions. I understand there have been settlement discussions, and there may have actually been a mediation already. I'm not sure. It was our understanding that the case essentially was settled. And again, I don't want to represent something that may or may not be correct, but it's my belief, at least, that the CHP is the one that has pushed this appeal forward. We're always interested in settlement talks and trying to make this go away, and I think we've really tried to do that before having to go through all the briefing and everything else like that. I don't know what the appropriate process would be at this stage, but yes, I think we would be happy to accept deferred briefing or deferred ruling.
Counsel, I think the normal type of order that we enter in some cases would be an order to the parties that would ask them to advise if they both wanted to mediate, or we'd have the mediation office contact the parties and we'd say that submission was deferred until the parties had time to respond to that, and that if they wanted to mediate, then we'd defer submission until the conclusion of the mediation.
I believe that'd be absolutely appropriate, yes.
And then whenever we knew that it wasn't going to be mediated, then we'd proceed to develop and issue an opinion.
Yes, yes, Your Honor. We would be open to that, certainly.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Gregor versus CHP and Flores is submitted, and this session of the court is adjourned for today. Thank you both.
The Ninth Circuit reviewed the case and determined that the district court's ruling was correct. The court held that qualified immunity did not apply because the law was clearly established that arresting a firefighter for performing his duties at an emergency scene would violate the firefighter's Fourth Amendment rights. They concluded that it was well established that public safety officials like firefighters have a duty to secure accident scenes for safety purposes, and that arresting them under such circumstances would violate their constitutional protections. They agreed with the district court that no reasonable officer would have believed that arresting Gregoire for doing his job was lawful. And finally, 4 years after the incident, and only after the Ninth Circuit shot down the officer's appeal, the CHP settled with Gregoire for an undisclosed amount, instead of continuing to fight the ridiculous case, choosing to indemnify Officer Flores, wasting tens, if not hundreds of thousands of our tax dollars. Worse yet, it appears the CHP stood by his side, and it was never confirmed whether Officer Flores was reprimanded. He retired in 2020, but the public never forgot. If you need to blow the whistle but must stay anonymous, or you, a friend or family member, was victim to police misconduct, to have your story shared, submit it using the link in the pinned comment and description. Let me know what you think in the comments down below. And if you like this video, be sure to check out another one, linked on your screen.